Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, folks. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and we are still virtual. We're not back in our home inside Renaissance Bank on Windward Parkway in Alpharetta quite yet, but we're hoping that day is going to come sometime soon. But folks, in the meantime, just a quick shout out to the folks at Renaissance, because they have been awesome for the folks we know about that work with them, particularly through PPP loans and what have you. And one of the things I would tell you is, if you're tired of the mega bank experience, the 1-800 numbers, not knowing who your banker is, well, Renaissance offers a different alternative to that. Here's what you need to do. Go to renaissancebank.com, find your local office, some 200 across the southeast, open and ready to serve you. Call them and make an appointment, and you'll find that a live person will answer the phone. So enjoy that personal experience. Give them a try, and they'll be glad to help you. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. And now I want to welcome Ryan and Daniel Pernice, and they are the co-owners of RO Hospitality. Gentlemen, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, great to have.
Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you. Great to have both of you. I'm going to get into how two brothers are able to work together in the same business. We're going to get to that in a second, because I think people need to know that, actually. But before we get into some of that, talk about RO Hospitality, who you are and how you're serving folks out there.
Yeah, sure. So we have a company called RO Hospitality. It stands for Reckless Optimism. So RO Hospitality owns 3 restaurants in North Fulton. We've got 2 in downtown Roswell, Table in Maine, which opened in 2011, and Osteria Matone, which opened just 2 years after that. Our latest one, our Babies Coalition Food and Beverage, which is up in downtown Alpharetta, and that just turned 2 years old in June. So all 3 restaurants are still fully operating. We're open back to business, both outside and inside, and doing a robust takeout business as well. So we're ready to get back to it.
Well, and I think that's what a lot of folks would love to hear. So let's just get into it. I mean, you obviously weren't planning on a pandemic. Nobody was. So talk a little bit about that journey and kind of where you thought you were before all this started, and what you had to do in March and April and May to kind of get to where you are now.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, we had 3 restaurants that were all running at a pretty good clip. Early March generally is the inflection point of when we leave behind winter, which for us means no patios and a little bit slower season, headed into spring, which is our real time to shine. All 3 restaurants have beautiful outdoor spaces, so we were ready to rock and roll out there. And along came, I think it was March 16th or 17th, which was the date that the president shut the country down pretty much. And as you said, that was not in our 5 to 10 year plan. So like many businesses, we had to do what is now my least favorite word ever, which is pivot to a different model of full takeout without dine-in. Before the pandemic, we did maybe 5% of our total revenue was takeout, probably closer to 2 or 3. Now, afterwards, we're doing about 15% as a company. So that gives you a sense of where we've gone. In that first couple weeks, the chaos of the initial weeks of the pandemic, we combined all 3 restaurants into Osteria Matone, which is the largest kitchen and has a pizza oven. So that was a big part of our takeout. And we did just 1 menu for each of the 3 restaurants that sort of combined their greatest hits. So we had fried chicken from Table in Maine. We had pizza and pasta from Osteria. And we had our fantastic CF burger from Coalition. All 3 restaurants pushing towards 1 goal of staying afloat in that crazy time.
Now, talk a little bit about the 3 brands and I guess kind of where you are now with all of them. It sounds like they were all 3 together at one point in 1 location, but now you've kind of pulled them out and kind of getting back to, I don't want to use the word normal because I hate that word too, but pivot, but getting back to a different kind of operating environment where all 3 are back separately.
Yeah, well, as Ryan mentioned, we had to close down essentially completely. I mean, heretofore, we've been doing most of our business as dine-in business for all three of the restaurants, which operated independently, had no very little shared resources between the three. You've got two in Roswell, one in Alpharetta, the new one Coalition. But once this all went down, like a lot of businesses, just any business across any industry, but especially restaurants, you're in a period of consolidating resources, hyper cost control, just try to streamline things and maintain to A, figure out what's going to happen around the world, around the country, and around your community, but also figure out how you're going to best respond to that. So as part of that strategy, we just ceased all operations at Table & Main and Coalition in Alpharetta, brought everyone we could over to Osteria Mattone, and just operated our takeout business, kind of combining elements of the concepts from the menus from the three restaurants, consolidating them into one menu and cooking out of Osteria Mattone. That being said, I'm sure we'll get into this in a little bit, but we did operate our Table & Aid operation out of the Table & Main building. So that was one way to sort of keep that facility in play during that time. The Coalition was essentially dark, shut down for a solid four or five weeks.
Mm. Now, yeah, and I do want to get to Table & Aid in just a second, but so we're in this show here, taping this show as of end of September. So are all three locations back open, or are you still in the one location with all three brands?
That's correct. All three locations are back open.
Okay.
We're all three locations. Yeah, this is September 21st. So as of, it was early on, I think Georgia famously was the first states to reopen all businesses, at least in some capacity, and most businesses, at least in some capacity. And we were, so by about end of May, certainly first week of June, we were at all three restaurants back open, cooking, offering at least patio dining and takeout. And we've maintained that since. So it's September 21st. Now we have all three restaurants open as much as we safely can. So limited indoor dining, spaced out patio dining, and takeout at all three locations.
Gotcha. Now, I mean, I jumped ahead into the COVID environment, which is what everybody seems to want to know about. But I think it's really appropriate for you, Ryan and Daniel, if you would talk a little bit about the three brands and, you know, why the direction of each of them, you know, what parts of the market they serve, you know, what, I guess, depending on what mood and budget people have, where they should go.
Sure. So we've got three restaurants and a management company under our overall umbrella. And that management company, let's, for lack of a better word, call it corporate, provides kind of payroll and admin stuff for the other three restaurants. The first restaurant is Table & Main, which opened in 2011, set out very much to be a neighborhood clubhouse. It's simple seasonal Southern cuisine. The fried chicken is the thing we're best known for there. About 120 seats, a large portion of that, just over half actually, being outside. And especially now on September 21st, we've actually added more patio seating outside, a big picnic table, all sorts of stuff, because outside is where people want to be. Average check or the per person spend over there is about $32. So it's in that space where you can use it as a special occasion restaurant. You can have, pre-COVID, a company holiday party there and whatnot. Or you can just kind of show up and see what Chef Woody, who's the executive chef there and a partner at Coalition, has cooked for the daily special for that day. Mm-hmm. Just up the road is our more fine dining restaurant. And Dan, as an owner and operator of this one, runs this show as our sommelier over there, is Osteria Mattone. We call that one Rome and Roswell. A pretty strict focus on, obviously, Italian food, but furthermore on Roman cuisine, which is a specific canon of dishes like tonnarelli, cacio e pepe, and all this great pasta that we do make in-house. We just debuted a six-course pasta tasting menu over there that's been a huge hit over the last couple of weeks as part of our innovation, which is something all restaurants are doing to figure out their way forward. Like I mentioned, a little more fine dining. They have tablecloths on one section of the restaurant. So that can be either, hey, it's 9 o'clock and we forgot dinner. Let's get a Peroni and a pizza at the bar. Or you can have that coursed out experience. Your son's home from college. You're celebrating an engagement, whatever it is, in the trattoria dining room, the more formal dining room. about 140 seats at that one. Again, largely on the patio. Average check, average spend there is approaching about $50. So a little more fine dining. Dan does a great job running a wine program there that's very central to the concept. Coalition, our newest brand, is a little more fun and loud and hectic. TVs in the bar, bigger bar scene, both in terms of the physical bar and in terms of how people choose to use that space. It's got all this cool exposed ductwork and brick and steel and glass in a very urban setting to complement the burgeoning city of downtown Alpharetta. So we really wanted to bring that city urban excitement inside, and Coalition reflects that very much in the build-out. A little cheaper than the other two, average checks sub $30. So we've got, you know, our burger there is the most popular thing on the menu. That's, I think, $15. We do a more neighborhood bar and grill kind of feel at that spot.
Folks, here's chatting with Ryan and Daniel Pernice, and they're with RO Hospitality. I'm curious about just the couple things. I mean, it's hard enough to run one restaurant, much less three. And it's not 1 + 1 = 3. That's probably 1 + 1 = 6 or 7, maybe. Right. Talk a little bit about the challenges that you've had, in running, you know, three distinct brands and then how you've woven them together in the way you have, particularly in the pandemic.
Yeah, I think the number one answer there is people. You know, you hear this a lot in business, and I think it's one of those business, it could be a little trite cliche to say, but it's actually true. I think you got to find the people who can make the thing run the way you would if you were there yourself. Because as I started Table Name in 2011, you know, there's only so much of me to go around, right? Now, luckily, Dan is able to do much better in the wine sphere than I am, so he's able to take Osteria and run that restaurant to his strengths. You mentioned how two brothers can kind of work together in the business and be co-owners. And largely we do it because we both play to our strengths. Mm. So Dan takes the concept of Osteria and kind of imprints his wine knowledge and experience there, sort of extends that to the other restaurants in his role as our beverage director. And while he gets to play with fun wine tastings and things, I do my strengths, which are more, accounting and insurance related things. So I got the short end of that stick for sure. But it works for us.
Well, and that's something go ahead, Daniel, please.
I was going to say, just speaking to my contributions and elements to the beverage programs, it's a lot of, like Martin said, having people in the place that you trust to make decisions that you would be looking for. I mean, obviously, we're not looking for, there's no carbon copies of ourselves. We do exactly the same thing. But from my perspective, I like to have people to know that there are people in place at the other restaurants that can recognize a new product on the market or recognize a new beverage, a new wine, a beer, something like that, that I would think would be successful, plug it into the system over there successfully, set the right price for it, establish supply for it, make sure there's plenty to go around. Those individual granular decision-making things so that we can kind of keep an eye on it in general, observe the results, and then advise on any changes that need to be made. That's the only way to do it, because we simply can't be making those level of decisions all the time for each of the three locations.
You mentioned the importance of people, and I'm just curious, and I know a lot of our folks are business owners that listen to this program. They have the same issue, which is how you keep folks motivated during a time like this. Why don't you share maybe some of the observation secrets that you've got around that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to tying people to the mission. So I'm going to bring in this element of conversation we touched on earlier, which is table and aid. So a lot of what we do is set a vision and bring people along for the ride and get them engaged on what we're doing. During the pandemic, we went from enabling hospitality. So whatever magic happens in a dining room across the table, that's why I got into this business. Believe it or not, I didn't start restaurants because I like boxing up food and putting it in a paper bag and passing it to you without so much as a hello in your driver's side window, which is what we were doing for a while. You know, sure. we had people in the depth of the pandemic who would just kind of point at their trunk, and you know, we were all unsure of what this virus was. So we were putting to go in people's trunk, and they would drive off. That was, you know, it's a little weird for everybody. So how do you enable hospitality in that new world was a challenge for us. So one of the reasons we started Table and Aid that we didn't even know was as primary as it became was the need to connect with people and nurture human-to-human contact. So Table and Aid was an initiative we started down the road from Osteria, the restaurant Table and Aid. We started in 2011. And while all three restaurants were shut down, we had the resource of this building that was still vacant down the street to just kind of have as something we could use. It became clear that a lot of people had a need for food. They were laid off. You know, a lot of the Meals on Wheels type programs were suspended because their volunteers are elderly and they weren't running door to door out of fear of the pandemic. We also had an interesting problem, which was as we combined all three restaurants, we literally had too many cooks in the kitchen. So we had to figure out a way to get our team out from under each other, because when you take three executive chefs and put them all in one kitchen, it can be a little bit of something. So we got to this idea that, look, guys, we're going to try and create a win-win-win for the community here with this initiative called Table and Aid. We're going to box up lunches and give them free, no questions asked to people in the community Tuesday through Sunday from 11 to 3. We ended up serving 9,723 meals, about 152 a day, over that months-long period. I think it was about 2.5 months we were doing that. So why I mentioned that in this part of the conversation was that provided a visceral connection to the sort of hospitality that we started in this business to experience. And when we were serving those people and showing up and cooking for people to nurture the community, that's why we did this. Huge unexpected side effect of doing that was a connection to the mission. You know, when we're in this crazy new world and everyone's trying to feel out what the contours of our new reality are, that helped us remember, no, this is central to what we do, and it will help guide our decisions moving forward. How can we serve people? And that's what we're about.
And as an extension to what Ryan's saying, tying people to the mission, getting everyone on the team involved in driving towards this collective goal, absolutely keeping people, helps in keeping people focused, especially during these times. But one other thing that I found that we found that was critically important during these times was the element of transparency in both in the process by which you've established these goals for the team, these directives you issue as a leader in your organization for both for every level on down, general manager, manager to staff members. It's important at times to sort of lay out the plan for them, give them some explanation, even at times bring them in onto this decision-making process. The more they can feel like a part of it, the more they'll feel motivated and establish intrinsically this sense of ownership to the goal you are tying them to. That's been effective.
Yeah, that's a great point, Dan. You know, we both work for a guy named Danny Meyer who has a lot of great Danny Meyerisms or you know, little sound bites you can throw out there and go, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And one of the things he said was service is when things happen to you and hospitality is when things happen with you. So as Dan mentioned, we spent a lot of time interfacing with the staff on, okay, guys, here's a decision we're making. How do we feel about this? We had multiple Zoom conferences with the entire team and restaurant by restaurant because people were scared, you know, myself very much included. We were unsure of the viability of restaurants moving forward. And just in terms of the short term, people didn't know how they were going to get paid to put food on the table and exist between whatever period till we return to normal, another word I hate now. So all of these things mean when there's an absence of certainty, you know, I think you have to be more front and center in saying, look, guys, I do not have all the answers, but here's how we're going to solve these problems. And that I think helped at least add an element of comfort to the team that, you know, even if I didn't know everything or have all the answers, we were going to figure them out as part of a conversation.
Guys, you talked about purpose with your employees and how that took tangible form with Table and Aid. You know, it strikes me that you really stepped out there during a time, as you say, Ryan, where you're thinking, you're wondering whether we're even going to be in business in a few weeks, literally during that really stressful time, you really stepped out there with Table and Aid at a crucially important time. And that really sent a signal to the community in terms of purpose, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that's going to separate those businesses that are able to weather this and those that aren't is you really better have been making deposits in the community bank of goodwill for the length of time you've been open. Because if you suddenly step on the scene and something as horrible as this pandemic happens, and you haven't been visibly engaged with the community to that point, it's going to make it a lot harder. I mean, as Dan would agree, our regulars, our core community of people who have supported us for the last 9 years really showed up both within that Table and Aid initiative and writ large over our takeout process. So I think that's a huge thing that you can't whip up that sort of community goodwill overnight. And by the time March 17th happened, when you woke up on that next morning and everything was different, you better have that community that has your back or it's going to be a lot harder.
Yeah, that's a great point. You really had to be oriented that way before the pandemic hit, right? I mean, you couldn't just suddenly make a switch there and be really authentic to your employees in the community.
Yeah. You know, people, even well before this, authenticity was a buzzword in small business and branding and all those things. And you can't fake authenticity. So you either have that street cred in your community or you don't.
Folks, we're chatting with Ryan and Daniel Pernice, and they are with RO Hospitality, brothers with RO Hospitality, family and business. You mentioned Danny Meyer in your background. I'd love it if you, for those that don't know your background really well, to give folks a sense of your journey and how you ended up in Roswell, Georgia, and Alpharetta.
Yeah, Dan, you want to take that for you, and then I'll do me?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, similar stories, I suppose you could say. We were both born on Long Island, lived for a while in Williston Park and in Centerport, and my father worked for a long time for Pan Am, and my mother was a teacher. When Pan Am was bought out by Delta in the early 90s, they offered him a job, but we had to move to Atlanta. So that's what brought us here. It was for a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, it was like moving to another planet. Essentially. However, you know, we're here in North Fulton. I think this community, this area of the state in particular, does a great job of kind of welcoming people from, because we have Atlanta's welcoming people from all over the world. Hartsfield Jackson is a big international airport, one of the busiest in the world. We accept people from all over the world. We have been for decades. So this area particularly does a really good job of welcoming new members and new communities from across different parts of the state. And so I was able, I mean, we lived down the street, someone who also moved to Long Island, who was in my cousin's fourth grade class. So we felt a great sense of community here. Went to eventually, both of us graduated from Roswell High School. Both of us went out of state for college. I went to Elon in North Carolina. Both of us ended up in New York City around the same time, and then we started working for USHG, Union Square Hospitality Group, which is Danny Meyer's restaurant group up in New York, within 4 days of each other. Our first days was the same week. Ryan was a manager down at Maialino. I started out in the bar room at the Modern and eventually became a sommelier and then spent a few years there doing that. Then I moved back down. Ryan opened up Table Main in 2011. I moved back down here in 2013 to help open up Osteria Mattone. And then, you know, just been working on that ever since.
Right.
Yeah, so as Dan mentioned, we had a parallel kind of journey. So both of us also started working in a restaurant that, John, you may remember. Remember the Roasted Garlic?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I started working there when I was 14 in the kitchen of the Roasted Garlic that happens to be just a block away from our third restaurant, Coalition, now.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Grew up through high school working in kitchens. And at a certain point, my dad said, boy, if you really like this restaurant stuff, you know, there's a school for that. So that's how I ended up at Cornell University School of Hospitality Management. Went through that program and really enjoyed having settled on this as my path. You know, I sort of dabbled in consulting, thought for 1 second I might do finance, and then just said, you know what, I just love restaurants too much. There's that feeling of what I call a cockpit mentality when everything is clicking on a Saturday night. And you've got, you know, that guest coming in, you've got these new servers who are killing it, you've got your old servers who are doing their magic. And I think that's a feeling I can't get anywhere else. After college, I worked for a small restaurant consulting firm called Avero, and then transitioned into a restaurant opening at Maialino, where I was the operations specialist, which is a great title because it doesn't mean anything. And you can kind of put your imprint on that role. And basically it was, you know, I had a skill set that was a little more Microsoft Excel based. So while the floor managers were running the floor, I was in charge of creating all the processes that enable a successfully run restaurant. So inventory, scheduling, tip share, all those different things. You know, my job was, hey, Ryan, we got to figure out a way to run the tip pool legally and easily, build a model. So I built an Excel model. All these different ways that I had a real boot camp experience in how to put a restaurant together that was invaluable. Aside from all that, we're working for Danny Meyer, who's generally agreed to be one of the preeminent restaurateurs in the world, and certainly in this country. So working for him taught me a lot of different things about managing people and what your priorities need to be as an operator. Then I had the opportunity to open a restaurant in my hometown, Roswell, in 2011. And at the time, didn't have a wife or kids. I still don't have a wife or kids. So it seemed, you know what, let's take that leap. And if it fails, it's just me who doesn't eat. But I was living with my parents, so that was taken care of too. So it seemed like a good time to jump in. I will mention Dan was being a little modest. He was on the wine team at the Modern when they won a James Beard Award under Belinda Chang for outstanding wine service. So around the time that Table in Maine had hit a point where, okay, this might actually work, we were approached by our landlord who said, hey guys, I'm going to open another restaurant or buy another building down the road. Do you want to do another restaurant? And the answer at that point from my chef, Ted Leahy at the time, and me was certainly no, we're not ready. But if someone's going to compete with us, it might as well be us. So we said, you know what, let's do it. And decided that we needed someone who was smarter than I am in wine to run the wine program there. And Dan agreed to jump on back home and run that place. So here we are.
That's an awesome story. Talk a little bit about what the future looks like. I mean, your crystal ball is just as cloudy as everybody else's, so we understand that. It's hard to know kind of how things play out over the next few months and into next year. But as we sit here in September 2020, what does it look like for your business?
I thought we were gonna have you tell us that.
Well, see, the great thing about this, I get to ask the questions, Ryan. So, yeah.
Tell us what to do. What do we do?
Right.
You know, I think that a lot of people, especially in the beginning of this, in early April, there was very much of the sky is falling mentality about restaurants are going to be changed forever and it'll be all chains across the country from here on out. It'll be only to go. I do think some portion of that is true, but not nearly as much as people thought. I do not think there will be a paradigm shift between what restaurants look like in January of this year to what they'll look like in January of 2021. I think that to-go is certainly going to be a bigger part of our lives, not to love Dan Myers, but he recently pointed out that safety is the new ambiance, and I think that will impact design and operational decisions of restaurants. So there will certainly be the lingering residue of our sort of trauma, collective trauma from all this. But I think that in what I've seen from my guests at the restaurants, there's nothing that leads me to believe people don't just want to get back to normal and forget this ever happened. You know, our takeout, as I mentioned, went from, let's call it 5% of total revenue to 12, 15 now. That's not the paradigm shift I was told to expect. Even as people lean on technology will save us in this pandemic, and it will all be, you know, touchless payments and it will be touchless menus and this, that, and the other. That's just not my reality. My guests hate that stuff. So I'm very cautious in our restaurants of adopting technology for technology's sake alone. My guests are what I'll diplomatically call my friends' parents, and that demographic, they don't want to scan a QR code to look at a menu. They told us loud and clear, we want the menus back. You know, we had both options for a while. I think maybe two people looked it up online, and the rest asked for a menu.
Really?
Yeah. So wow. I think as we feel our way forward, you know, it's not been my experience that we're going to have to do this completely clinical, you know, white or totally washed experience. It's just now going to be slightly different in making people feel more comfortable to dine in the restaurants.
I have to agree with Ryan on that. And certainly everyone was exposed to literature at the beginning of all this that said the landscape will never be the same for restaurants. You're going to see spikes in to go and take out and that will never go away, so forth and so on. And I do think that there will be some things that we do different now as a society that we didn't do before that will just be this way now. A lot of companies have committed to working from home next summer and things like that. But as far as restaurant dining, I've certainly seen locally and have read and talked to people about locally that people just want to, there's an overwhelming desire to get back into restaurants and get back to regular dining as they knew it before the pandemic. The question, the challenge that lies ahead of us is just wanting to do this in a controlled way to safely get back to it, maintaining people's comfort and people's trust. Because we are in this new environment that is not going away anytime soon, so we better get comfortable with it. But believe me, I'm totally on board with the idea of we want to get back to dining in restaurants. And I think that's totally fine. I mean, I've spoken to friends up in New York who are still at, who just started limited capacity for dining inside restaurants. And people can't wait to get back to that. I mean, I think that you'll still see continued trends of a rise in the gig economy, like takeout companies and delivery companies, Uber Eats and DoorDash. I think those will continue, but maybe maybe this has accelerated their rise, but they're not. It's not going to be the be all end all. You're still going to have traditional service, and there's still an overwhelming desire for that from the dining populace.
And I don't want to drone on, but I do want to make one point going off Dan's point, which is that I don't mean to minimize the magnitude of the challenge in front of small business everywhere and especially restaurants. We are all yearning for a time to get back to normal. And there are flashes of normalcy in our dining room day to day, as thank God we're pretty busy right now. But it is not normal. You know, our restaurants are still 20 to 25% down. People are still expecting a different pattern of behavior from restaurants. We are having to invest a lot of money in different physical things to implement in the restaurants. And I posted on Facebook the other day, it takes a lot of money to make this much less money. You know, we're putting in physical barriers that cost each restaurant about $6,000. We just spent a couple $1,000s on heaters for the restaurants. We installed new bipolar needle point ionization filtration systems at our two Roswell stores. So all these things have a massive cost, and we are nowhere near back to our normal numbers that we'd like to be doing at this time of year. So all of that to say, you know, we still need the customer support. We still need all that community engagement because it is not normal, however much we want to get back to that.
Yeah, and thank you for going into some detail about that, guys, because, you know, I think when you say you're down 20, 25%, people don't realize that that's just one half of the income statement, that there are expenses involved that have gone up in spite of the fact that business is down and you're not serving as much food. You know, your expenses have gone up, so you're getting squeezed kind of both ways. And it's important for folks to remember to continue to get out and support your local restaurants, whether you're comfortable in dining in or taking out, support your local restaurants.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, as everybody knows, restaurants never made much money to begin with.
Right.
So when our revenue takes a dip of 10 to 20 to 50%, as many restaurants in the country are still experiencing, that's a big thing to try and shoulder.
Yeah.
To say nothing of the fact, but let's not forget there are also massive wildfires and great social unrest in the country that have caused restaurant and business closures and damage and all these things. So, you know, we're looking at the world we're living in, and our new reality is it is really difficult to run a small business. Political stuff aside, there are lots of things coming at us right now. So, you know, if people are listening to this, I want them to take from it that small businesses still need your support. I'm very confident we're going to get where we're going. But as we all repeat time and time again, we're all in this together. And if there are any politicians listening to this, we could really use another round of something to help us bridge the gap here.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, maybe they'll listen. We'll see. I think they're more busy arguing right now, but we'll see. Maybe we'll get something out of them. But in the meantime, what we all can do, as you say, is we can support our local restaurants. And really, it's a time for people to understand who's behind the restaurants. I mean, and y'all have done a great job at coming forward and saying, this is who we are. And if you like what we're doing, support us. And thank you for that. Thank you for what you're doing.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, this has been great. I don't want to let you go, though, without giving contact information for those that want to connect with your three brands or however they want to connect with you. Let them give them an idea where they can go.
Yeah, sure. So we've got right now one website that features all our restaurants, menus for take-in and dine-out, reservations, gift cards. We tried to make it as easy as possible to support the restaurants. That's at eats.rohospitality.com. You'll find Osteria Mattone, Table & Main, and Coalition Food & Beverage right there, ready to go with online mobile-enabled ordering and all that jazz, because that's, I think, part and parcel of what we need to be doing these days. We're also on social media, Facebook, of course, and Instagram, so you can find us there as well. Dan and I are both on Instagram also, so we have all sorts of fun stuff coming out on that platform.
Awesome. Ryan Pernice and Daniel Pernice from RO Hospitalities. Guys, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Likewise. Yep, thanks for having us on.
Thank you so much. Folks, if you need help that involves administrative tasks in your business, maybe you need some bookkeeping help, some help with marketing, social media, what have you, I've got an answer that involves picking up the phone and calling S.E. Escobedo over at Office Angels, 770-442-9246. S.E. and her team have been virtual for 2 decades, so they understand how to operate in this environment. They can operate on an ongoing or as-needed basis, and all you have to do is just call up Essie and explain what your problem is, and she'll send an angel to fly in, get the job done, and fly out. Officeangels.us is the website if you'd like more information, or again, 770-442-9246, and let Essie know that we sent you her way. And then, folks, just another quick reminder, you can find our show on all the major podcast apps. North Fulton Business Radio is the search term. You can also go to northfultonbusinessradio.com and find an archive of going on 300 shows that we've done over the last 4 years, featuring great business leaders like Ryan and Daniel. And we would love it if you would connect with us on social media as well, North Fulton BRX on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. So for my guest, Ryan and Daniel Pernice, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.